Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis.
You know, I normally have a guest in the studio with me, but I want to do something different this week and fly solo. This is kind of an experiment that I want to run on American Variety, and I'd like to get your reactions to it. It's something I used to do a few years ago, and I'm going to actually run a rerun from a few years ago. It's called Good News Week, and I'd like to see what you think about it. You can email me at court@americanvarietyradio.com and let me know. So here goes.
The idea is, you know, do you ever feel like we're drowning in bad news and that it's disproportionate to the actual reality of what goes on around us and in the world? I mean, there's plenty of bad news in the world for sure, but the media really just primarily focus on what's, kind of disastrous and salacious and sensational and shocking. I mean, one thing that really puts it in perspective is when you come back from vacation where you may not have read the newspapers or watched TV for, 10 days or something like that, and then you read the papers and it really shocks you because you're kind of like desensitized a little bit, or you are sensitized, I guess, again to the impact of all this stuff you read, and it sort of strikes you a little harder than it normally does. So, I mean, sometimes it really seems like we're kind of witnessing a speeded up version of the fall of Rome, a very rapidly declining civilization, and I kind of don't have to elaborate. Everybody sees that, I think, So, there's a funny song that I sometimes think of that was done by a group called the Kingston Trio, who probably haven't been heard from since about 1964 or so. And my parents had this album, and I was a little kid, when we got our first stereo in 1960 or something. I used to put this album on because it was, funny and fun to listen to. They were folk singers. There were three guys, kind of like the Smothers Brothers, in that their songs always had a message. But, they were lively and humorous and entertaining at the same time. So I'm actually going to go out on a limb and sing one. This is called The Merry Minuet by the Kingston Trio in 1961. So if you don't like it, well, I guess you'll just have to put up with me for about a minute. Here it goes, a cappella. They're rioting in Africa. Dun da 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 da. See, you even get musical with this. They're starving in Spain. Dun da 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 da. There's hurricanes in Florida. Ba la 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 la. And Texas needs rain. Dun da 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 da. The whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans hate the Poles. Italians hate Yugoslavs, South Africans hate the Dutch. And I don't like anybody very much. Dump, dump. But we can be tranquil and thankful and proud, 'cause man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we know for certain that some lovely day someone will set the spark off, and we will all be blown away. They're rioting in Africa, la-da-da-da-da-da-da. There's strife in Iran, la-da-da-da-da-da. What nature doesn't do to us, la-da-da-da-da-da, will be done by our fellow men. So that's kind of funny because it's, 46 years later, and a whole lot of that is still true. I mean, it's changed around a little bit. We have hurricanes in Florida. Texas doesn't need rain at the moment, but often does, but a whole lot of it is the same, I mean, there's strife in Iran, da-da-da-da, but rioting in Africa, so it's kind of like that French phrase, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, right? The more things change, the more they stay the same. So what we do here on Good News Week is try to focus on good news stories, and they can be hard to find. You have to hunt them down. And so I found some websites that actually focus on the good news, and they're few and far between in this country and around the world. And, we'll intersperse it with some kind of wacky news, too, some crazy things that happen that are funny, but, goofball things where nobody got particularly hurt or whatever. So there's a website that I find a lot of these things on called Heroic Stories. It says www.heroicstories.com. Let me be sure to give full attribution there, right? So it's heroicstories.com. And here's one. They come from all around the country, right? And they're signed. So I just got to thinking by R. Thompson in Colorado. My dad and I were hunting in the mountains surrounding Gunnison, Colorado. It was September 1988, and we were on a dirt road access road to the wilderness area. Few people know of this road. So these are things that are written, recently, but maybe they took place long ago. So few people knew of this road. As my dad and I drove to our drop-off location, we saw an older hunter with vehicle trouble. We stopped, and from the look on his face, I knew there was serious trouble. He had tried to cross a ditch-like road depression. His radiator had flexed in its mounting brackets, and its top had popped off. All we could offer was a ride out to get a new radiator in town, 30 miles each way. We thought of getting a tow truck, but the man mentioned he probably didn't have enough money for that. My dad had an idea, though. I would continue to hunt from our drop-off point, and he'd take the man and the broken radiator to town for repair. My dad didn't mind helping the elderly man. I remember my dad always telling me to help out where you can, even if there isn't a promise of reward or expression of gratitude. Know that it always comes back when you may need it most. I hunted the rest of the day, but a hitch in the story developed in town. All the parts stores were closed. It was Sunday and hunting season. My dad took the man and the damaged radiator to a friend who had a garage. Dad thought he could solder a temporary patch on the radiator and get the truck to town for a more lasting repair. The repair was made, the truck was fixed, the man drove off to town, and my dad returned to the planned pickup point for me. When I arrived, he told me what had happened, and we planned for tomorrow's hunt as we drove back to town for the night. As we approached the outskirts of Gunnison, there alongside the road was the old man's pickup. We guessed the repair hadn't worked, so we slowed down as we came closer. The old man stepped out from in front of the truck and waved us down. I rolled down my window, and my dad asked if the repair had failed. "Nope," the old man said. "I just got to thinking while I drove that I really hadn't thanked you for all you'd done for me, so I just pulled over and waited for you to come by. Boys, I'm buying you dinner tonight." We followed him to his favorite cafe. As we drove behind him, my dad and I had to think on this. That old man must have waited beside the road for over 3 hours to catch us coming back into town so he could buy us dinner. It was that important to him to express his gratitude for what my dad had done. If you really are committed to making a gesture of thanks, nothing will stop you. So here's another one from heroicstories.com. This is called "Thanks for the Choice, Ken," by Dale W. in Washington State. As a recovered alcoholic for nearly 12 years, I could write a book about how much I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous and Ken B., my first sponsor. His love and unwavering dedication to other alcoholics come back to me on an almost daily basis. In November 2004, my stepdaughter lay dying of cancer in the hospital. Being retired, I was the late shift, staying through the night with her while working family members got badly needed sleep. I took a short break outside to walk and stretch. Coming back, I re-entered the hospital through the emergency room and noticed a young man at a payphone hanging up the receiver. He asked me where the coffee machine was. Since it was on my way, I offered to show him. As we walked, he told me he'd gotten a call from his brother telling him their mother had been in an auto accident and was in intensive care. But he had come to the wrong hospital and needed to get to a city about 50 miles away. Unfortunately, he was out of money and gas. He told me he'd been at his building maintenance job when he'd gotten the call and had left immediately. My first thought was the same as most people's might be. He's just a panhandler. But I looked closer. His clothes were paint-splattered, and drywall dust still clung to his shoulders. I remembered a conversation with my sponsor, Ken B., about unselfish acts. He said Mother Teresa had done so much good because she wanted to live in a world where those acts of kindness and love could occur. It was up to her to do her part to create that world. Reaching into my wallet, I pulled out my last $5 bill and gave it to him. That would give him enough gas to visit his mother and drive home afterward. When he offered to repay it, I told him, "You may or may not be what you say. That's none of my business. If you want, keep a five tucked in your billfold to give to someone else in need." When I told someone else about the incident, I was asked, "Why?" The unspoken message was that I'd been taken advantage of. Recalling the conversation with Ken B., I pointed out that it was a win-win thing for me. If the story were true, I'd been able to help this man see his mother, possibly for the last time. If not, then a woman was not in a hospital bed, faced with a long and painful recovery. What a relief to know that. I choose to live in a world in which a person can reach out in a time of need, and a stranger will be there to do what they need the most. In recovery, I've been given back that choice, thanks to Ken B. That's also a case of making sure you view your situation as being half full rather than half empty, huh? You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're doing Good News Week. So this is something that isn't actually good news, but it's kind of funny news and goofy news. We do some of that, too. A 10-year-old boy took a school bus and led police on a chase along a rural highway, according to police. This is from Dumas, Arkansas. School officials had spotted lights coming from the bus yard around 11 p.m. Friday night, then reported the bus stolen. Officers from three counties, four towns, and Arkansas State Police began chasing the bus and its driver. Despite road spikes set up to slow the bus kept traveling north toward Little Rock along U.S. 65 through Deshaw and Lincoln counties, then into the next county of Jefferson. "Be advised, you missed them all. We're now coming into town. Speeds at 25 miles an hour," officers said over a radio scanner. About 44 miles later, the bus slowed down enough for a sheriff's deputy to make the stop in Pine Bluff, and officers discovered their suspect was a child. They cuffed the boy and took him into custody, then later released him to his parents. It wasn't known whether the child would face charges. School officials said he'd been part of a group caught on camera trying to pull the same prank last month, according to KATV television station in Little Rock. So that's kind of a funny story, but here's another, actually, oddly enough, another Arkansas bus story. Same week. Headline, large Arkansas family buys hockey bus for travel. And the dateline is actually Port Huron, Michigan. A big brood needs a big bus, a really big bus. A 15-bed bus once used to transport the now-defunct Port Huron Flags minor league hockey team has been sold to an Arkansas couple with 17 children. Count them, 17. When the team folded in May, Fred Minnie posted an ad trying to sell the bus in an auto magazine. He was contacted by Jim Bob and Michelle Dugar.
Sound familiar?
Whose 17th child, Jennifer Danielle, was born August 2nd. There's not too many of those buses with 15 beds in it, Minnie said. Minnie did not disclose the purchase price. The family's 7,000-square-foot home is in the northwest Arkansas town of Tontytown. Sounds like Tinkertown. Tontytown, and Jim Bob Dugar said the family hopes to travel to visit relatives in Ohio. We've done a limited amount of travel in it so far, he said. It'll be something we'll use, hopefully, in the years to come. So, back to our heroic stories. This one's called Add That to the Soda, Please. And it's by Quinn from Colorado. My friend Tammy works from home, rarely traveling more than walking distance from her downtown Denver, Colorado apartment, let alone outside the city. During the late 2002 holiday season, Tammy's Aunt Jess, who lives on the far edge of town, got pneumonia. Though not elderly, she has asthma. She didn't ask for help until her doctor ordered her to stay home and relax. Jess wasn't sick enough to hospitalize, but the doctor wouldn't let her leave his office until he knew someone would be at home to care for her. Tammy's brother picked Jess up, but neither he nor Tammy's sister could leave work for days. Tammy was the only relative with the freedom to stay with her aunt. James stayed with Jess until Tammy arrived, if you're following this, but he had to leave almost immediately. Since Jess had been feeling bad for a while and there was almost no food in the house, Tammy decided a shopping trip was in order. She made a careful list so that she wouldn't have to be gone longer than necessary. The grocery store was close, and she made great time getting the groceries in 15 minutes. After digging around in her purse at the checkout stand, Tammy realized she'd left her wallet on the table back in her apartment. Everything was already checked out, and there was a line behind her, so she was absolutely mortified as she apologized to the cashier and explained the situation. The cashier began to clear the order, but the gentleman behind Tammy spoke up. He looked at the total, handed the cashier his credit card with the bread and soda he was holding, and told her to add Tammy's groceries, over $100 worth, to his tiny purchase. When everything was checked through, the man pulled his soda and bread from the cart and walked away. Tammy snapped out of her shock and asked for his name and address to pay him back. He told her not to worry. He could tell she wasn't having a good day, and he was glad to help. He just kept walking. Tammy couldn't catch him, so she just went back to take care of Jess. A couple of weeks later, when Jess was better, Tammy remembered her grocery store savior. The only thing she knew about him was where he got groceries, so every chance she got, she took the one-hour drive back out to the store. She worked on her laptop in a cafe nearby and watched for him. It took a week and a half of staking out the grocery store before she saw him again. She stopped him as he was coming out of the store and asked if she could buy him dinner to repay his favor. She told me she wasn't sure which was nicer, being able to repay his favor or the surprise on his face at seeing her again. You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm Court Lewis, your host here, and we're talking about good news stories and oddball news stories and anything but bad news and pain and suffering stories, right? So we're trying to lighten up our little corner of the world here for half an hour. Here's another one. This is on clam chowder by Denise Jolly from Oregon. A lot of them from the West Coast here. They said he wasn't right for me, but I was 15 and desperate to be loved. We ran off together. I ended up pregnant, and he abandoned me in Weed, California. In the weeds. I waited for the money he said he'd wire, but it never came. So there I was, alone and wanting to die. I had $2 and went to the grocery store to buy razor blades. The purchase left me with a quarter, and I went to the lunch stand in the back of the store. I was so hungry I knew the dying always got a last meal. This must have been a long time ago. She was going to buy anything for a quarter. I don't think I really wanted to be dead, but with the overdramatic emotionalism of my age, I could see no alternative. The only thing on the menu I could afford was a cup of clam chowder. I didn't like clam chowder, but I ordered it anyway, and while I waited, I began to pray for some kind of sign that I should stay alive. I was interrupted when the waitress set a big bowl of clam chowder in front of me. "But I only have enough money for the cup of chowder," I whispered to her. She put down a big glass of milk beside the bowl of chowder and said, "That's all right, kid. You look like you need it. Her hand briefly brushed mine. I had to look back down quickly because my eyes were filling with tears. I knew my prayer had been answered and that I'd been shown there was still kindness in my world. I knew then that I could go on. I called my father, and he arranged for a bus ticket back home. There were more hard times ahead. I lost the baby, but several years later I married a wonderful man. The kindness of that waitress has stayed with me. She could not have known the power of her kindness, but she taught me that no kindness is ever wasted, no matter how small it might seem at the time. I'm a mother and a grandmother now, and I love clam chowder. So I think the theme of all these heroic stories so far is kind of basically the kindness of strangers. In fact, they all have been very much that. Here's another one called Keeping the Darkness Away by The Survivor, just USA. In February 2005, at age 50, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, stage 3C. The symptoms of this cancer, I later learned, are called whispers. I had been to two different doctors who diagnosed entirely different problems. The first one said I had ulcers, while the next one said it was irritable bowel syndrome. All I knew was how horrible I felt. I was unable to eat or drink more than a swallow or two. I slept sitting up so I could breathe. My abdomen was so distended that I couldn't wear any underwear. All in all, I was totally miserable. Finally, on a Wednesday morning, my husband helped me into the car and took me to the emergency room. The first question they asked was why I hadn't gone to the doctor. I had to explain myself over and over. The first doctor had diagnosed ulcers while standing in the doorway, given me sample medications, and sent me home. The second doctor made a cursory examination, told me to eat lots of fiber, and prescribed several new drugs. Because I have Parkinson's disease, I'm extremely cautious about taking new drugs. When I questioned him, the second doctor actually yelled at me and told me that he knew what he was doing. Then he told me I was obviously a hypochondriac and should stop wasting his time. Good Lord, she must have had a terrible PPO. I must have told this story 10 times as different people came in and asked me to again relate what had happened. Several tests later, as the day faded into evening, the results of my CT scan came back. The nurse knelt on the floor by my bed, holding my hands. Tears streamed down his face as they told me it was cancer. They scheduled me for surgery on Monday, the soonest that the gynecological oncologist could get there. Finally, I found myself alone in a room, frightened, very sick, dehydrated, and weak. I wondered whether I would survive. My story had spread through the hospital, and as I lay in darkness that night, alone and afraid, the most amazing thing happened. Soon a doctor came in, held my hand, and talked quietly of survival and how good life is. When that doctor had to go, a nurse took his place for a half hour of quiet reflection. Then a pastor prayed with me through a lonely hour until another doctor took his place and just sat quietly while I dozed. I was never alone that night. Every time I woke up, I found someone quietly waiting with me, keeping the darkness away. As of today, I am cancer-free, and I hope I will stay that way. I'll never forget those busy doctors, nurses, and many other professionals who took time to sit by my bedside and to try in their own way to take away my fears. Morning brought more than just daylight. It brought me peace. See, the kindness of strangers. Ready for some more oddball, offbeat humor stories? This is several of them that are all kind of in the category following up on that medical story. These are in the category of body parts. A little cruder, but somehow goofball. This is from Greenville, South Carolina, or at least it was in their newspaper. Shannon Wisnant has said all along he was willing to go to court for the right to keep John Wood's severed leg. Sure enough, a judge will soon decide who gets custody of the Simpsonville man's amputated leg, it must be South Carolina, which was found stored in a barbecue smoker, mistakenly sold during a mini-storage public auction. Judge Mathis is the judge, that is. The nationally syndicated Judge Mathis court show, which has aired since 1999, features former Michigan Superior Court Judge Greg Mathis. Plaintiffs and defendants sign an agreement beforehand that stipulates that Mathis's decision is final and legally binding. The judge often pokes fun at both parties and allows sensationalistic courtroom outbursts as he listens to both sides. The maiden North Carolina man who claims he owns the leg because he bought it and now wants to charge admission to see it, both Wood and Wisnant. Okay, Wisnant is the guy who bought it. Wood is the guy who lost the leg. Both of them are headed to Chicago for a Friday taping of the show, both men said. Neither would elaborate on their appearance on the show. Wisnant declined further comment. He's the buyer of the leg. On Monday, Wood, the loser of the leg, said he'd like for any money that comes from the publicity to be given to local charity. He said news organizations worldwide have expressed interest in the story. A German television station offered to fly the two men to Frankfurt this week, he said. It's only the latest odd turn in a two-week-long ordeal that has made worldwide headlines, haven't seen those, and brought an overwhelming wave of publicity for two men unknowingly thrust together after a public auction at a private mini-storage. Here's the backstory. Wood's leg was amputated above the knee after a plane crash in 2004 that killed his father. Instead of disposing of the leg, Wood decided to keep it so that it could be cremated with him when he dies. Kind of an obsessive-compulsive type, maybe. He stored it in a freezer for a while, then hung it on a fence post, okay, before stowing it in a barbecue smoker. You may be a redneck. That was among his belongings, housed in a Maiden Plaza mini-storage unit. Wood landed in financial trouble, and 2 weeks ago, his belongings were sold during a public auction. I guess he forgot about the leg. Wissnett bought the smoker, among other items. When he got the smoker home, he opened it and found the leg and foot wrapped inside. At first, Wissnett said he thought it was a piece of driftwood, until a liquid oozed from the leg onto his hand. He called 911, told the dispatcher he was grossed out, and surrendered the leg to authorities, there you go, who gave the leg to a funeral home to take care of. After ruling out foul play, the funeral home contacted Wood, the original owner, to come pick up his leg, which the funeral home had embalmed. It was nice of them. However, Wissnett saw the publicity that Wood's story received and decided he wanted the leg back so that he could charge admission for people to see it. This is You May Be a Redneck. He already has charged $3 for adults and $1 for children to view the smoker. I don't know, with or without the leg. Wissnett said he wanted to write some books and do some movies. Any ghost writers out there for Mr. Wissnett? Several books, a whole series on his leg. Last week, Maiden Police gave the leg back to Wood over Wissnett's objections. Wissnett said he has a receipt to prove ownership. Wissnett offered to allow Wood joint custody of the leg and said he'd make sure, oh yeah, the leg would be cremated with Wood eventually, right. Maiden Police Captain Tracy Ledford said authorities decided to hand the leg over to Wood because Wissnett had already given it up. I think that's right. Wissnett and Wood met briefly last week but didn't settle the issue. So that was our first body part story. Here's another body part story. Brain found in bag near Virginia apartments. Richmond, Virginia, Dateline. A brain was found in a bag near a Virginia apartment complex Tuesday morning, but it was not clear if it was human or animal, police said. It was discovered next to a suburban apartment complex under construction and near a mall, Richmond police spokeswoman Carla Peters said. The state medical examiner was examining the brain. She said it was not clear how long it had been there. We're waiting for the medical examiner to determine how we should proceed, Peters said. I reckon. Well, let's see. Here's another body part story. Man's false teeth lost during surgery found later in throat. This one actually comes from all the way around the world in New Zealand. Doctors in New Zealand lost a man's false teeth during his back surgery, but found them 4 days later stuck in his throat. Ooh, yeah. The 81-year-old entered the hospital in February 2005, and his upper dentures were removed before the operation, a Health and Disability Commission report said Friday. But somehow, the report said, the false teeth got back into the heavily sedated man's mouth. A neurological condition allowed him to cope with having them in his throat for days, although not easily. After the operation, the patient complained of extreme pain. Nurses noticed his voice was husky, and he couldn't eat very much, the report said. Doctors put a laryngoscope down his throat, found the missing denture plate, and removed the teeth. Experts said a cyst in the center of the man's spinal cord had pushed on his brain stem, damaging the parts responsible for swallowing and the feeling in the back of his mouth. The man recovered, but died within a couple of years from unrelated respiratory illness, the report said. Before the lawsuit could be completed. The commission did not identify the hospital, the town, or any of the people involved. The Health and Disability Commission investigates complaints of medical malpractice. Its probes are often extensive and takes many months. That's why it was a couple of years back. We're just hearing about this worldwide news now. Gosh, here's another similar body part story, I guess. Woman has pencil removed from head. After being plagued for 55 years with the torment of a pencil lodged in her head, a German woman has finally had it removed. Yo. Margaret Wegner, now 59, was 4 years old when she fell while carrying the 3.5-inch long pencil, which went through her cheek and into her brain. Ooh, there's a lesson for you. It bored right through the skin and disappeared into my head, Wegner told Germany's best-selling newspaper, Bild. It hurt like crazy. At the time, the technology did not exist to safely remove the pencil, so Wegner had to live with it and the chronic headaches and nosebleeds that it brought for the next 5.5 decades. Ooh, there's actually a CAT scan of it here. It looks like it went through her sinuses. But on Friday, Dr. Hans Bederbaum, an ear, nose, and throat specialist at Berlin's Parkklinik Weissensee, was able to use modern techniques to identify the exact location of the pencil so that he could accurately determine that the risks of removing it, and then take most of it out. The operation was particularly difficult because of the way the pencil had shifted as Wegner grew, Bierbaum told the Associated Press on Tuesday. This was something quite unique because the trauma was so old, said Bierbaum, who was also operated to remove bullets from the brains of shooting victims and glass from the brains of people involved in car accidents. Though a 3/4-inch piece of the pencil could not be removed, Bierbaum said it does not present a danger. And now Wegner, the wife of a German boxing coach Uli Wegner, will no longer have the headaches and nosebleeds. I bet that caused questions. And her sense of smell should also return soon, Bierbaum said. She shouldn't suffer any longer, he said. Well, that's good. So, well, back to, you know, one final good news story, because we've just got a couple minutes to go here. Blowout on Kirkstone Pass. It was a trip of a lifetime. Despite the loudly voiced concerns of friends and family, I was actually in England after an impulsive decision to embark on a solo trip around Great Britain for 15 days. I had rented a blue Renault and had already been on the road for 4 days with no problems. I was in a country known for its liquid sunshine, and it hadn't even rained. The trip was going wonderfully, and I was excited to be visiting England and its breathtaking scenery. I was in the Lake District on tiny Kirkstone Pass, somewhere between Ullswater and Windermere, when something else breathtaking happened. A loud bang, followed by the wheel jerking to the left, jolted me from my reverie. I glanced back in my rearview mirror just in time to watch my hubcap go bouncing behind me. A blowout. It was caused by the low rock wall along the road designed to prevent people from pulling off onto the shoulder. Now it was preventing me from moving out of the way of traffic as well. There I was in the hot July sun, trapped on the tiny road, traffic heavy behind me, and no way to move the car. Cars began slowly passing me, and I got sympathetic looks from many of the drivers. One couple offered to take me to the nearest phone, but I was afraid to leave the rental car abandoned in the middle of the road. I stood there dejected amidst the glorious yellow and brown hues of the pass, barely noticing because I was too busy worrying about how the rest of my vacation time would turn out, when a van pulled up behind me. The van had bright yellow kayaks on top. Two men jumped out. "What seems to be the problem?" the older man asked. I told him. He immediately took charge. He opened the trunk, unloaded my massive load of luggage, grabbed my spare tire, and despite the risks inherent in changing a tire on a narrow road at an angle, managed to change my tire in just a few minutes. I offered to pay them, but the older man told me to have a great vacation and drove off. I managed to get to the Ullswater Lake, where my steamer was waiting. As I pulled onto the deck, I saw the same two men kayaking on the lake. They had taken time out of their vacation to help me in a moment of need. The older man saw me and waved. "You won't get a flat tire on that," he yelled, laughing. Well, that's it for Good News Week here on American Variety.
Again, this has been a little experiment, and I'd like to get your feedback on whether you like it or not. So if you liked American Variety or didn't, send me an email to court@americanvarietyradio.com and let me know.
Thanks for listening out there. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.